For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for January 31st, 2007. In this edition, we'll talk with data protection expert David Taylor about ways to protect your company from a data breach. Meanwhile, TJX Companies continues to feel the fallout over its massive data breach. And finally this week, we'll talk about Symantec, which announced plans to acquire IT management software vendor Altiris. But first, the news. TJX Companies is still feeling the effects of its massive data breach after a hacker exploited a flaw in the company's systems as far back as 2003. A West Virginia woman filed a class action lawsuit against the company this week. The woman accuses the company of negligence for not doing enough to secure customer data. In addition, an Alabama bank filed a similar class action lawsuit against TJX. According to the Boston Globe, the lawsuit looks to recover losses from the cost to replace compromised cards and fraudulent charges made with exposed data. Meanwhile, Massachusetts Congressman Ed Markey called on the Federal Trade Commission to investigate. There's no word yet on whether the FTC plans to launch an investigation. In a moment, we'll talk with data protection expert David Taylor about ways to protect your company from a data breach. But first, this message.
So you're looking for good reference books on information security, but it's so painful trying to figure out which ones are worth reading. And you're sick and tired of spending time on all those tedious e-com websites trying to sift through all of those anonymous user reviews, right? Well, here's a word of advice. Check out CertSecurity.com's Information Security Bookshelf. CertSecurity.com has compiled an impressive selection of reference book excerpts from leading information security experts, including Ira Winkler, Gary McGraw, Kevin Mitnick, Joel Dubin, and many more. And if you want more than an excerpt, you can download a full chapter for free. Check it out today at CertSecurity.com/bookshelf. That's CertSecurity.com/bookshelf.
And we're back. With me on the line is David Taylor. He's Vice President of Data Security Strategies at Stamford, Connecticut-based Protegrity Corporation. And Taylor manages the strategic consulting group there, where he delivers and manages customized investigations of how people interact with data security. Now, before joining Protegrity, Taylor co-founded and was Chief Research Officer of the InfoPro. And he spent 14 years with Gartner, where he developed and managed Gartner's Applications Group and Electronic Commerce Research Area. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's go straight into the TJX data breach. And I'm sure you've been following the flow of information that's been coming out of TJX. Can you give us an idea of how you think the company thus far has handled disseminating information to the public?
Well, honestly, it hasn't been the best and probably hasn't been the worst. They've taken a lot of heat, obviously, for not disclosing more quickly. And the excuse, which I'm sure many of your listeners have already heard, is they wanted to, you know, kind of shore up their infrastructure before they started talking about it. And I guess, you know, to some extent, it is understandable that they would want to do that. But the problem is, once information about a security breach comes out, if the company that's had the breach doesn't put out a statement very quickly about what specifically they're doing, they risk other people filling in the gaps, so to speak. And there's been so much press on this. And so, I mean, they've taken out full-page ads recently to try to explain themselves. And they could have spared themselves a lot of cost if they'd just issued some relatively straightforward press releases about the procedures that they were taking and how they were working with law enforcement and how they'd been, you know, they'd hired some experts or something like that, something that says they're taking concrete action. They could have been spared the class action lawsuit that has been filed, and there may be others filed in the course of this. And I think a lot of it has to do with anytime an organization delays reporting a breach or talking about a breach until the point that there's already been fraud as a result of that breach, which is what happened here, then essentially you've got a double whammy. You know, you're dealing with the breach. You're also dealing with specific fraud that has taken place. So what happens is, I think actually one of the first organizations to put out a press release on this was one of the financial institutions that it had to reissue over 1,000 credit cards as a result of specific fraud. And of course, you know, the bank is bearing the brunt of the criticism associated with that, or at least they took some heat associated with that from their customers, and they're going to, of course, naturally transfer that back to TJX. So now they've got banks as well as end consumers who are kind of ticked off at them, and that doesn't help.
But to give them the benefit of the doubt for the moment, their initial statement was that they were asked by law enforcement officials to not make it public initially.
Yeah, but then what happens is if you don't, once it comes out, you know, even if you're not the first, then you don't want to sit on it while, if you will, others have a field day with it. And, you know, if you find that, you know, your customers are getting letters from financial institutions, you need to step in immediately and take control of the situation. I'm not a public relations person. I'm just a security person, and you know, all I can say is I can compare it with other breaches that I have reviewed and evaluated, or companies that I've worked with that have been breached, et cetera, and what they've experienced. And I know that you know, if the longer you wait to act, the more it's going to cost you, just in terms of dollars, as well as you know, customer confidence and brand value and all that kind of stuff. You know, and to some extent, a security breach is just as much about the company and its brand as it is about the security of the data, because both are rather severely affected.
Now, who should pay the price? Is there a chief security information officer who is probably has his job at risk at this point?
Well, I think in any situation that's this public, yeah, there's probably somebody that's going to fall on their sword. You know, honestly, it's not up to me to say. I know historically, I know that there are some specific instances. I can think of three specific individuals who were chief information security officers who lost their job associated with security breaches. So let's put it this way: it wouldn't be uncommon. It would actually be statistically very common for that to be the case.
And this is probably the nightmare that every CISO has.
Yeah, I think that's probably very much the case. And, you know, it's interesting. Yesterday I was giving a presentation in North Carolina on the payment card industry security standards. And, you know, the issue of the TJX breach came up. And we were discussing it, and the people in the room, all security professionals, you know, their attitude is roughly that they understand it. They get it, if you will. And I think most of the listeners to this program get it. You know, they understand the importance of security. If called upon to do so, they could probably provide a reasonable proof that, you know, protecting data is a very, you know, cost-effective way of spending your money relative to other things that you could do in IT or maybe in other areas. The problem is that, like most things where the real problem is only seen after something like a breach occurs, that people only then begin to understand, well, why should you have done this in the first place? I think a lot of security professionals find that, you know, management who doesn't understand security and doesn't understand, you know, technology risk, you know, they're reluctant to spend the money. So, I mean, we, for example, at Protegrity, my boss, who's our CEO, he and I put together a data protection kind of model, if you will, which is You know, because frankly, some companies should ask us, how do you come up with, you know, a metric to justify protecting data against a security breach, and specifically for security breaches? So we went through a whole process of trying to model all of the different factors that would affect a security breach and figure out what level of expenditure you could justify in anticipation of a breach, and look at the relative, we looked at dozens of different risk factors that would affect or determine the likelihood that you could have a security breach. And so we found the modeling part to be an interesting exercise. Maybe somebody would find that to be useful, perhaps not. But again, trying to understand that turned out to be very enlightening for us, just as we were looking at the data.
I don't understand why a company would archive customer data on a system that is connected to the outside world.
Yeah, that would be bad. There's no getting around it. That is, you know, and the funny thing is, I spend most of my daily life doing things related to the payment card industry data security standards. Mm-hmm. And a question came up in some of the articles that I had seen relative to TJX. There was this question about whether or not they were in compliance with PCI DSS. And the answer has to be no. And I can't say whether some assessor didn't pass them or not, but if they're doing that, by definition, they are not in compliance with PCI DSS. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, that clears it up right there. And the answer is, of course, they shouldn't have been doing it. And one of the things that I run across all the time in my consulting work is the trade-off between data retention policies in an organization and data security policies. And obviously, the more data you have, the longer you keep it, the more difficult it is to keep it secure, because over time it takes different forms and is in different places and is copied, and those different copies are protected in different ways depending on where they are and when the data is extracted from databases and put in spreadsheets or put in personal databases on people's computers and all that sort of stuff. The more places it is, the more different forms it takes, the more it's emailed around a company, the more a company incurs risk by doing so. So even in this case, where you've got data on a system connected to the internet, which of course, you know, there's network segmentation problems that are obvious there, but there's also data retention problems and data protection problems, meaning that if we're on a public server, if it had been properly encrypted, it wouldn't have mattered. If it had been, you know, separated from the internet via firewall, and if it were encrypted, it still wouldn't have mattered. I think the key thing is, you know, what are the set of access controls? What are the set of encryption technologies that are implemented? And you know, where on earth is the data? I'll tell you, when I go into an organization, one of the first things that I ask is that it's kind of a paraphrasing of the classic Wendy's commercial, where's the beef? Where is your data?
I wanted to ask you about encryption. And since you mentioned it, also, we've received messages from our readers saying, sure, you can say, you know, you need to put encryption in, but it's just too darn expensive.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I do get this question quite a bit, and some people, when they say that, I think they may mean expensive in terms of performance. Other people may mean expensive in terms of dollars, but I mean, actually, you know, there are a variety of different types of encryption systems. Some are very easy to implement. It depends on your platform. One of the things that I find to be most interesting is that companies have I think increasingly been implementing different types of encryption, you know, the encryption of individual files on a laptop, encryption of entire disk drives, encryption of particular files or directories on servers, encryption of databases, encryption of columns within databases, encryption of email, encryption of attachments to email messages, And when you think about all the ways to do this, some of them are relatively inexpensive, some are free, and others can be more expensive. I think the big thing is trying to figure out how the heck you're going to manage all of those different types of protection methodologies. And I have people tell me all the time that what they find to be the biggest problem is that they have protected data in a bunch of different ways, many of which aren't all that compatible with each other. So you can encrypt stuff on an Oracle database, and then let's say it has to move to another system. Maybe you're moving it from a server to a mainframe, and you know, from one type of database to another, from one type of platform to another. And you take it out of one system, you decrypt it, then you move it, then you re-encrypt it. The key management for something like that is difficult to scale. The policy management, you know, how do you consistently enforce a policy or a set of access control policies, you know, because PCI DSS requires need-to-know access. You know, who specifically needs to know about this information, this particular piece of information at this point in time for this particular purpose, and having that and managing that turns out to be not the easiest thing in the world. And honestly, I don't think, and I believe that this is consistent with the payment card industry and its overall position on protecting data. I don't think you can say that just because a technology is not easy to use or maybe cost you some increment amount of money. I mean, whether it's small, whether it's large, depends on your particular configuration, I think, and how you plan to implement it. I don't think you can say that just because a particular technology is something that you don't currently use, that you shouldn't use it, that you don't have some sort of obligation to protect the data. I think that the folks in the payment card industry are saying that if you have data, you have an obligation to protect it at rest, in transit. You know, you have to define and enforce a set of policies and procedures to manage that information. You know, if this were easy, everybody would have done it. It's not easy, and it's not free. But at the same time, it turns out there's a whole bunch of problems out there, internal malfeasance, external malfeasance. And if we're going to keep this data, we need to do something to combat that. So I don't know of any other way to do it. Encryption is just one, if you will, tool or one weapon in an arsenal, if you will.
Now, just the bottom line, the data retention folks need to be shaking hands with the data protection folks. There needs to be the right encryption in place and the right policies in place.
Absolutely, and they need to be enforced. One of the things that I see all the time is that, you know, there are the written policies, which are great. PCI data security standards require a set of written policies, and they need to be well documented. But you can't just have written policies. You have to figure out how to enforce them. What's the software that you use, and how do you effectively enforce them in an automated fashion? So it's not just, you know, kind of whether or not you remember that only this person or only that person can access this data. The other thing is, and this is very important for some larger organizations, I should say for all organizations really, the physical controls. You cannot forget about those, because a lot of what contributes substantially to insider-originated security breaches are the physical controls associated with a particular enterprise and how consistently and how effectively they're implemented, because we've seen huge variations from one company to another, and a lot of it has to do with kind of the physical setup of the enterprise and how well segregated and how well and consistently implemented the physical controls are to keep people who have need-to-know access separate from those who do not have that need-to-know access to the sensitive data.
Well, David Taylor, we're out of time. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And finally this week, Symantec announced plans to acquire IT management software vendor Altiris. The acquisition is valued at $830 million. Symantec said it will use Altiris' technology to beef up its endpoint security products. Industry analyst Mike Rothman of Security Insight told Search Security that the acquisition shows that Symantec is looking to be a competitor to IBM Tivoli rather than being up against McAfee. And that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Next week, be sure to check out several special editions of Security Wire Weekly. The Search Security team will be reporting from the RSA 2007 conference in San Francisco. We'll bring you reports from the show floor and interviews with security experts and industry analysts. The coverage can be found by checking out searchsecurity.com/RSA07. The latest information security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. And you can always catch our Security Wire Weekly podcast featuring interviews with security professionals at searchsecurity.com/podcast. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.